You're listening to Bible Prophecy Daily, a weekday podcast where Bible prophecy matters and matters greatly.
And thank you for being here for another episode of Bible Prophecy Daily. I'm your host for this episode, Jake McCandless with Stand Firm, where we're helping believers navigate such a time as this, and especially focused in on families, helping them build a faith that lasts in such a time as this. And today we're going to finish a series of episodes from my time in Israel recently, as I toured the sites of the attacks on 10/7 and heard from anyone from survivors all the way up to the head of strategic command for the IDF. And as I was there, not only was I seeing what was on the ground, what had happened, but I felt like as I sat through each of these briefings that I was watching prophecy unfold right before my eyes. And I know many of you feel that already. You don't have to be there to see that. But I was there in July with my family. Of course, before the attacks, it was incredible. Definitely saw God was at work. One of the major parts of that tour was looking at a lot of things that had happened since 1948. Well, really before that, going back to the late 1800s as the first families began to come into Tel Aviv. But as I was there recently, again, I felt like prophecies just were unfolding, like I'm watching a movie of them unfolding. So we started with the first one talking about watching. You know, we know there's a prophecy that the sacrifices will end. Well, they'll be put to an end by the Antichrist. So therefore, they have to start, and likely there has to be a new temple. Of course, everything I was seeing was the destruction brought on by Hamas, and then continually encountering the fear from the north, from Hezbollah. And as we covered in the last episode, these are proxies of Iran. And I felt like Daniel 8 was unfolding. Well, here in this third prophecy that I felt was unfolding, we're looking at Daniel 11, because as I sat there hearing from the head of strategic command of IDF, I couldn't help but feel like Daniel 11 was unfolding. Now, like Daniel 8, Daniel 11 is a prophecy that, I don't want to say the traditional view, because when you say traditional view, that makes it sound like throughout Christianity. But we know, just when it comes to eschatology, there's so many different views. When it comes to Daniel, unfortunately, there's different views. But within premillennial eschatology, the common interpretation of Daniel 11 is that a bulk of it was fulfilled historically, going back of the times following Alexander the Great, and especially the continual wars between the kingdom in Egypt, of Ptolemy, and the Seleucid kingdom in what we know as Syria today, modern-day Turkey, and throughout the Middle East. As these different generals took control after Alexander's kingdom was broke up, these two kingdoms came to the forefront. And it's interesting, as we looked at Daniel 8 in the previous episode, Daniel 8 opens the door for this. Daniel 8 tells about, of course, the power in Persia rising, or modern-day Iran. Then a leader coming out of Yavan, which was Western Turkey, Greece area, Macedonia area. And though I feel like it's a possibility that all of that could be fulfilled futuristically as well, I definitely see the historical pattern. It definitely captures the rise of Alexander the Great, him defeating the Persians, his kingdom being split up. And out of one of those kingdoms, out of that split, coming the Antichrist, which I think other places would point, him coming from the Seleucid kingdom. Again, Syria, modern-day Syria, modern-day Turkey. I do see this historical pattern, but I do believe it is hermeneutically possible that all of this may repeat itself in the future, or maybe starting now. But Daniel 11 really picks up right after that. It picks up after the prominent horn is broke there in Daniel 8, and these four horns grow to the four corners of the earth. and follows the continual conflict between from the kingdom in the south and the kingdom in the north. But also in this common view within premillennial eschatology of Daniel 11, it is viewed as seeing this as historical, but then it morphing into the Antichrist, just like Daniel 8 does. Now, I think there's different lines on which that is drawn. I feel like Daniel 11, verse 21 is when we begin to pick up on this little horn on the Antichrist. And even after the Antichrist rises, there is still this conflict between the North and the South. So when we get into the undisputed territory of the common view of Daniel 11, these kingdoms aren't just past, but it talks about a king of the North, king of the South. And I know, again, across the spectrum of host here, there's different views of who these people are. I believe there's strong biblical support that this king of the North is the one we call the Antichrist. But I'm not arguing any of that right now. Is clear in this passage, I think we can not dispute, is that there is a coalition in the South and a coalition in the North. Regardless of how the Antichrist fits in this, there are these two coalitions. There's this king of the North, king of the South. And really the only identity of one of the nations involved comes with the South, as we're told it involved Egypt. So it's a lengthy passage, again, morphing what is at least a clear pattern in history, if not only a historical fulfillment in Daniel 11. I think Daniel 11 is an important key that has not been worked with enough. I believe if you could connect Daniel 8 with Daniel 11, I think we have a detailed timeline of the events that are going to happen. But again, regardless, that's not where we're going here. Just want to talk about the two coalitions, the two forming. Just to touch on that a bit, Daniel 11, verse 40 to 42, we read, "At the time of the end, the king of the south will engage him, the king of the north, in battle, and the king of the north will storm out against him. He will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. He will also invade the beautiful land, or Israel. Many countries will fall, but Edom, Moab, and the leaders of Ammon will be delivered from his hand. He will extend his power over many countries, and Egypt will not escape." And it goes into more depth and more of this conflict between the king of the south, the king of the north, these two different coalitions. Again, regardless of where we plug the Antichrist in this, we do know at the time of the end, at the time of the Antichrist, there is going to be a coalition of the south, a coalition of the north, and Egypt seems to be in the south coalition, if not a leader there. And I believe understanding and seeing how God works, again, through patterns within prophecy, that we could really draw the lines pretty much up to those kingdoms following Alexander the Great. So, Daniel 11, there's going to be a coalition in the north, coalition in the south. So as I sat there in that second military briefing, as this retired colonel, now back to active duty, begins to walk through the greater picture, he said, of what's happening in the Middle East. Because, of course, the attack we were talking about then, because at that time, Iran had not directly attacked Israel, or pretended to. So at first, he walked through. So in that briefing, he began to talk about the larger picture. Yes, Hamas attacked Israel. But Hamas, again, working as a proxy out of Iran, Hezbollah, the greater immediate threat, again, a proxy of Iran. And he walked through the other proxies and the other things going throughout the Middle East. And then to add to the bigger picture, he began to talk about the Abraham Accords. Of course, from the attacks, the Abraham Accords have lost some steam, fell in the background. But going back to 2020, we see these agreements being made between Arab nations and Israel, normalizing relationships. Basically, these Arab nations recognizing Israel as a state and looking at peacefully interacting with them. Very significant. And so there in 2020, you have the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and then Bahrain, normalizing relationships with Israel. Later that year, you see Sudan doing the same thing. And then the next year, we see this happening with Morocco. This was and is very significant. And if we go back to before those attacks in October, Saudi Arabia seemed to be moving in this direction as well, and then you would think other Middle Eastern nations would follow suit. And the thought at that time before the attacks, if Saudi Arabia gets involved, then this is likely going to lead to some movement there on the Temple Mount. So we have the Abraham Accords happening in 2020, and I don't know about you, but being as removed as I am, I mean, I followed over the years the agreements with Israel, of course, see prophetic significance with that, but it's really been, okay, we're just waiting for the big one. You know, we're just waiting for the Daniel 9 covenant with many. Or take the sentiment of, okay, just another peace treaty that's not going to work in the Middle East. Of course, there's been many, right? You know, we think back to Oslo, the Camp David ones. I mean, just these different treaties. One of the things that I had perceived them as these were, again, were just repeats of the same thing. But that's not the case. If we look back and trace out these movements, they're continual progressive steps in aligning some Arab nations with Israel. Let me walk through some of those progressive steps. So I encourage you to maybe lean into the perception that I'm beginning to take is as Israel goes into one of these agreements, it's not, oh, here's another one again, or, okay, this doesn't fit the bill, it's the ultimate one, but rather see God is building up to what we see in Daniel 9. So as I mentioned, there's a progression. So Israel becomes a nation, a Jewish state in 1948, and are continually in war, well, more accurately to say their neighbors are at war with them. And you do not have a normalized relationship with an Arab nation from 1948 until 1979. And it's at that time that Israel and Egypt agree to a peace treaty and begin to normalize relationships. It's at that time that Egypt gives the Gaza Strip to Israel. Of course, directly, you know, leading to the events of 10-7. So you have this nation, again, listed in that coalition of the South, of the King of the South, listed as the first to normalize relationships with Israel. That's 1979. You do not have another nation normalizing the relationship with Israel until 1994 with Jordan. Think of that, 1948 to 1979, no Arab nation has agreed to peace and normalizing the relationship with Israel. Basically recognizing Israel. Happens in 79 with Egypt, and not again until 94 with Jordan. So that's the past. And there is no movement towards any other nation coming on board until 2020. The Abraham Accords. And there in 2020, you have three nations come aboard. UAE, Bahrain, Sudan, and then 21, you have Morocco, and it looked very likely Saudi Arabia was moving in this direction. I think that shows how significant these Abraham Accords were, and hopefully still is, or I think prophetically still is. But did you notice the progression? These aren't just repeats of the same old thing trying to create peace. No, this coalition is building of nations that are aligning, and some aligning's maybe not the right word, but at least coming alongside Israel, accepting them. So as we're in that briefing, and this retired, now active colonel is walking through these different nations that have come and normalized relationships with Israel, it begins to light them up blue. And I noticed all of them were in the South. On the map, it looked as if I was looking at the coalition of the South. Does that mean we're there? No. I think often it comes to things like this, and I'm reluctant, and I'll say, well, you know, this is the type thing we're going to see. But I think if we really just take the whole snapshot of history of what's been unfolding, I think we have to recognize this is something that's been building. It's not like this Abraham Accord happened. This may or may not be it. There may be something else down the line. I think we need to see the significance of how it's being built. So you have these nations that in some way support Israel or are moving towards that. And then he began to show another map. These nations were marked in red. These were the nations who are actively against Israel. And of course, Iran. Of course, their proxies. As we mentioned, Iran basically has control of Iraq. They've got their hands in Syria. Of course, hands in Lebanon with Hezbollah. Of course, with Hamas in Gaza, the few that are left, and then the Palestinian control in the West Bank, and then in Yemen. The bulk of that in the north. He also began to talk about another nation that is adamant against Israel, and that being Turkey. And I believe you could then begin to list all the stands that are connected with Turkey, these Turkish nations. And when you begin to map that out, there was this block in the north of red nations and this block in the south of blue. Now, I guess if we were looking at politics in the United States, we need to flip the colors of those who support Israel, those not, right? But I'm watching this. This guy who's not a believer. And definitely not looking scripturally at what prophecy says, but yet he was describing Daniel 11 is being fulfilled. It will be interesting to watch where this leads and how this unfolds, but I do believe we can safely say there is the roots of this coalition already. I hope this will be something that you watch. Again, I know probably listening, and again, I know even some of the hosts here, we differ on how we look at Daniel 8. Again, I'm not knocking this historical portion. I believe it's there, but I believe it's worthwhile. What could be gained if that is completely fulfilled in the future? Daniel 8 is. What we can gain is so much. And so at least put it out there and just see. And I think the same here with Daniel 11. Of course, this is going to comes to real fruition throughout those final 7 years. But again, nothing happens in a vacuum. It makes me so mad when I see these end time movies and everything just starts within that 7 years. It takes so long to bring things around. And I believe it's likely we're seeing this build. Now, I don't know how this fits into the covenant of many. I think when you, like me right now, I have this map before me of those nations in blue and red. It's like, okay, there seems to be, you know, many already involved, but we'll see how that unfolds. But I think as we look at the word and we look out and see it unfolding, if anything, it should encourage us, hey, we're on the right path. We're following the one that's got things under control. As I've shared, our ministry Stand Firm continually to do stuff like this, but we're also turning our focus especially towards families in the next generation, hoping to build a Maranatha generation, a generation that is looking for the return, who sees it as a positive thing, and who is ready to stand faithful in difficulty. And I want to close each of my episodes with a Maranatha minute or near minute or a few minutes, whatever it ends up being. But again, I think anytime we talk about the events that are unfolding, man, how awesome would it be if that next generation knew these things and were able to see them? I've shared in a previous episode how that when we were in Israel, my youngest daughter, we were there in Bethel, which is a vineyard in the hills of Samaria. Everything was barren except this vineyard. And as we're there, the owner opens up Jeremiah 31:5 and reads about, once again, there will be vineyards in the barren hills of Samaria. And I get on the bus and my daughter says, Daddy, if we can bring everybody here who doesn't believe and let them see this, then they'll believe. And I think we've got to find ways to bring this next generation on. And again, I want to caution you, if you've not had these conversations and you've got like a middle school, junior high, high school, or adult child that you want to begin having these conversations, you've got to do so, you know, tread lightly. Share how much it means to you. Don't cram it down their throat. But listen, our kids are going to feed off our passion. If anything, just the curiosity to say, hey, this Bible possibly says this. Be interesting to keep an eye out to see if it's going to happen or if it is happening. Isn't Bible Prophecy Daily amazing? I'm so thankful to be a part of it, and I look forward to our next time together.
Thanks for listening to Bible Prophecy Daily. We hope you learned something valuable today. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss an episode.